Welcome back to PS Editors Podcast. Today we're talking more about robots, taxes, manufacturing jobs. With me today is Stuart Watley, another associate editor at PS, who is calling in from New York.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here.
So in a previous podcast, Jonathan Stein and I discussed Yanis Varoufakis's ideas on how to approach the taxation of robots. The idea is that robots are going to take over work that would traditionally be taxed as, say, income tax. And so, you know, how can we offset that? But another of our contributors, J. Bradford DeLong, says it's too early to be thinking about that at all.
Yeah. DeLong kind of enters into this conversation with a recent exchange. I think it was in the Financial Times opinion page and somewhere else. But Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin made some comments about artificial intelligence and Silicon Valley kind of unicorn firms, these firms that are valued at $1 billion, even though they haven't shown that they can even make any money. The disagreement they're having, though, is basically like, how imminent is this threat of you know, a workless, fully automated society? And I mean, there was a lot of books coming out recently on this too. There's a lot of discussion about it, and so some of it is justified because there are things like, you know, deep learning, advances in the Watson computer or whichever Deep Blue, which, you know, beat the World Go champion. All of these, there's these headline kind of making events that have got people talking about this topic. But DeLong is kind of emphasizing is that yes, this is all happening, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. And in the meantime, there's a lot more that we should be focusing on. And so, as he usually does, he's an economic historian. So as usual, he takes a very useful historical look at it and tracks kind of the evolution of technology as it relates to work over, you know, the centuries, basically. And what he shows is that, yes, everyone remembers the textile factories and how that displaced, you know, millions of workers, but there are countless other examples that don't always get mentioned where technology is not just like an immediate source of impoverishment for millions of people. If anything, it does the opposite. And so you can think of countless examples of this, but, you know, if you're just as a theoretical, you know, if you're a widget maker and you get a machine that makes your widgets faster, then as a widget maker, you can make more widgets and sell more widgets and so forth. And that's basically just what productivity growth is. And what most of the discussions about manufacturing in America today miss by focusing on trade agreements is that productivity growth accounts for almost all of the reduction in manufacturing employment over the past few decades. And that's what DeLong wants to kind of emphasize, is that by focusing on the wrong things, policymakers are missing what they should be doing in the meantime to kind of help workers, which is to say workers should be provided with safety. This is the solutions along this are provide workers with, you know, a safety net, provide training for how to use the new widget making widgets, and various other policies like that. So sorry, Whitney, I went on for a little while there.
Yeah.
But do you want to jump in on? So this was actually DeLong. I just gave a summary of DeLong's April column, but we're also going to be discussing his May column. So if you want to jump in.
Yeah, his May column focused a little bit more on manufacturing jobs and the sort of history of how those shift. And, you know, the idea is essentially that it's not necessarily that blue-collar jobs just disappear altogether. It just may be that they change. And in terms of what you mentioned actually previously also about productivity growth, you look at the coal industry, for example, which gets a lot of attention in the States now from Donald Trump talking about, you know, bringing back this industry. But you've got these technologies that allow for productivity enhancement. So there might not actually be jobs in that industry. But that doesn't mean, and as DeLong shows historically, that doesn't lead to just a dearth of blue-collar jobs. These people still can find other jobs in other industries, maybe more, you know, technologically advanced industries. Maybe the jump could be as obvious as from coal to renewable energy. Or maybe it can be into a services sector. The important thing is, as you mentioned, training and giving people the security that they need to shift jobs or industries, and not be stuck in unemployment.
Yeah, and you actually, this kind of raises an issue that DeLong discusses, but that I don't know if anyone really has a solution for it yet. But when he's describing how, you know, basically the last half century of history of manufacturing in America has been what he described, you know, one of churn, not job destruction. One of the largest areas of churn that he talks about is geographic. And this is, I think this is something no one has really figured out yet, is telling, you know, the workers in, you know, West Virginia that their jobs haven't disappeared, but they've moved, you know, to Florida. And so, like, mm-hmm. You know, how do we tell people that? You can't just uproot people from their homes. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, like there are proposals out there for like how to make it more affordable or how to encourage people to go to where they, you know, where they could be more useful. But that's a hard sell for people who have maybe been somewhere for generations. And yeah,
politically, of course,
it's
also just politically difficult to convince people. So as much as that might be the right economic choice, and there are ways to facilitate it, you know, if you want votes, that might not be, you know, giving people tough news is often not the way to get them.
Yeah, and that's really played into Trump's hands. His kind of cartoonishly simple picture that he draws is it just kind of uses the word manufacturing as a catch-all. But an interesting part of DeLong's discussion is that manufacturing is kind of a almost a useless term. Like, what are we talking about? Okay, so auto manufacturing, like making cars, yes, that's obviously manufacturing. But most of these workers in the early 2000s moved from manufacturing into, you know, home building during the housing bubble. They were still blue collar, which is maybe a broader, more useful term. They were still doing the type of semi-skilled, but, you know, doesn't require a college degree type work. And mm-hmm. so that's, and then I guess the latest shift is maybe to various roles in the healthcare sector that don't require, you know, a medical degree or anything. But this is what I think Trump has either is missing or purposefully kind of smearing over with a lot of his trade rhetoric.
Yeah, and DeLong actually refers to another previous DeLong piece in one of these where he talks specifically about NAFTA. And I think just to highlight, again, that oversimplification of the issue at hand, he points out that just 0.1 percentage points of the 21.4 percentage point decline in the employment share of manufacturing in the last 30 years is attributable to NAFTA. So that idea that, you know, we can just renegotiate a trade deal and, oh, the problem is just bad trade deals, it feeds into this very simplistic narrative. But if you look at kind of the figures and the trends underneath, it's not backed by those things.
Yeah, and I think an interesting additional point that he doesn't go too deeply into it, but he alludes to it, is that if you look at the decline in the share of jobs that are in manufacturing in, you know, similar countries that boomed after World War II, basically, I think he mentions Germany and Japan, they've had the exact same downward trajectory owing to largely to productivity growth. But then the U.S. has like an extra, 3% or 3.5% decline that, uh-huh. that isn't accounted for in declining productivity growth. And to that, he brings up the issue of basically politics. I mean, economics is hugely important, but it isn't a, you know, an autonomous machine. It is, you know, something that can be accounted for through politics. And since according to DeLong, consistently since Reagan, since the 1980s, the U.S. Has been pushing policies such as, you know, supply side tax cuts for the rich, fiscal stimulus, you know, all of these things that inflate the value of the dollar. And there's no better way to destroy your domestic manufacturing sector than to inflate the dollar, because it makes it, you know, it makes the workers here cost more. It makes it gives foreign manufacturers an advantage if they're exporting to the U.S. And so forth and so forth. And so I think that's an interesting point, though, because with the Trump administration, you have them doing, you know, just doubling down basically on the exact policies that account for that extra 3.5% of lost manufacturing jobs.
We're gonna spend a lot of money and also cut our revenues. I think that DeLong actually, he very briefly mentions one more thing that I think is interesting regarding kind of flawed U.S. policies, and he talks about U.S. foreign policy. And how instead of, you know, the U.S. delivers a lot of aid and is very involved in the world, but they're doing so rather than financing, you know, development and industrialization and creating more markets for their manufacturing exports, he says that they've been doing, you know, more unproductive things. It's been a little bit more political. He calls it the U.S. the world's money launderer, and that turns out to be not as useful as really getting their developing economies more developed so that they then can become markets, and that they can sort of, that relationship with the U.S. can feed in and enhance the America's economy as well.
Yeah, you're right. That's the global dynamic of the kind of flawed macroeconomic policies that he describes since the 80s is hugely important, or bigly, as you might say, because, as you said, I think the term is the financialization of the American economy, which, no coincidence, is generally said to have started around, you know, the late 70s, but mostly during the Reagan era.
Mm-hmm.
What you have is policies to encourage a bloating financial sector that is increasingly concerned with moving money around to make money for itself, but without any kind of real connection to the real economy, with the quintessential element of which is generally manufacturing. And so, you know, it does just speak to this divide of, again, it's the gap between the Trump administration's rhetoric and its completely, you know, stacking the decks in favor of Wall Street.
Yeah, and I actually would just finish maybe to bring it back a little bit to where we started. We started by kind of setting DeLong's argument up against this idea of a tax on robots, because that's not really the issue yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the UBI, the Universal Basic Income, is an interesting idea. It's another thing that's being debated a lot these days. There are, you know, I see the arguments for and against it. There's a lot of proposals for it would still kind of just play into those who already have more than everyone else. You know, if it's a universal basic income, then you're giving the same amount of money to Bill Gates as to you know, the single mother on food stamps or whatever the cliche is. So I think there are. So I do like Varoufakis's kind of creativity. I think there's a need for more creativity, but in the meantime, I think there's also going to have to be an honest, I don't know, maybe in 4 years, but an honest political discussion about, you know, the social safety net across all Western countries. France is currently dealing with, you know, what many would say is a bloated social safety net, but then others would say that the U.S. is kind of has a lot to make up for that's lacking. So I don't know. I think there's, I mean, this is going to be the biggest problem of you know, the coming decades. And it all depends on, I guess, when you think the robots are coming.
I think the idea that DeLong gives that the full robotization of the economy where everything's automated, I definitely think that there's some distance between us and that future. Although, you know, for some people in some industries, it probably feels a lot sooner because those industries, it is coming much sooner.
Of course, then you also have Facebook now hiring humans to look at the content on the site. We'll see how long that lasts, though. It seems like an impossible job.
Yeah, it's true, and there are still plenty of these unskilled jobs, and even new unskilled jobs that only humans can do. We still have some advantages.
Indeed.
All right, well, I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you, Stuart, for being with us. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our PS Editors podcast, and you will hear from us again next week. Thanks for listening.